is the Unapologetically Black Podcast.
Understanding that your blackness is part of your greatness.
Blackness just comes from being me, and that's it.
Men are allowed to do whatever the fuck they want to do. They can be cheaters, they can be liars, but women are expected to be righteous.
So if you're someone who in a concert you're going to say the N-word, in my opinion, at home you're going to say it as well. In friendship, there's someone who deposits and there's someone who withdraws. You don't want to be the friend that's keep depositing and the person that keeps withdrawing.
Poor people don't have time for depression.
I'm so tired.
Banning abortions doesn't actually reduce abortion.
But actually, if my mental health is not okay, I can't help you in any capacity.
I mean, my entire life, I've lived under the gaze of my parents.
Fuck that shit.
Hi, guys, and welcome back to another episode of Dig Deep. Now, the Dig Deep episodes, if you're new to them, are the episodes where myself and Leanne quite literally dig deep into our sisterhood by asking each other a series of questions. So we're going to take you on that journey with us. We'd love for you guys to get involved and let us know if you ask some of your friends or family too. But before we get into all of that, Lee, how are you?
I'm fine. I'm a little bit annoyed. I may have a rant today, but okay. It will come through. But yeah, I'm excited. My husband is planning a surprise for me. I'm very excited. I have no clue what it is. Very similar to the surprise that Shan gave me when I was in the UK. She surprised me with a dinner where all of my closest girlfriends, or most of my closest girlfriends, were there. It was so lovely to have everyone. So thank you for that, actually.
It's okay. Do you know what I was actually thinking about? Obviously, you was in the UK and then you left sooner than planned, yeah? And I was like, oh my gosh, thank God we had that dinner, because you had been saying you were missing your friends, and then at least you was able to see like a lot of us on that week. Whereas I feel like most of us you would have seen the week before you was leaving.
Exactly. I would have missed almost everybody had we not had that dinner.
So yeah. Do you know what I was thinking about? I was thinking about men and the way in which men violate women, yeah? Because I saw a text on my phone today and it reminded me of a situation that I was in. And essentially, I don't know if I ever told you this yet, but I was seeing this person for a while and then I stopped, yeah? And then when I stopped, there was like no contact at all, nothing. I saw them like many months later, a quick shebang happened, okay? And then... And then didn't see them again. Like, that wasn't, it wasn't really a thing. It was just, oh, I bumped into you on the train. Where are you going home? Like, yeah, like,
okay.
Yeah. So yeah, that happened. And then fast forward some months now, I remember I saw him on the train again, but he didn't see me because he had got off. So I just messaged like, oh, hey, like, I hope you're well, blah, 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 blah. And then I ended up calling. And then when we were talking on the phone, he was like, oh, is your phone near you? And I was like, yeah. And he was like, oh, look at your phone. And I'm looking at my phone and it says, I got tested. And I'm like, okay, what the hell has that got to do with me? And he's like, yeah, I got tested after or around the time that we had the shebang. And I'm like, okay, like, I don't get this. So I'm just continuing, like, what the hell is going on here? So he's like, oh, you reading my message? Because he's clearly with people, yeah. And I'm like, just stop talking cryptically. What are you talking about? And I'm like, oh, do you mean that he got an STI test? And he was like, yeah. And I'm like, okay. I still didn't get it because I bumped into him on the train, yeah, the second time, right, which is now the reason why we're on the phone. But I had been on the phone to him like 3 months prior to that. And the time that we had the shebang was like 2 months prior to that. So this is now a 6-month gap of when he's saying he got tested. So I'm just like, baby, like, what do we do here? Like, I don't get it. And he's like, yeah, so basically I got tested and I got chlamydia, so you should probably get tested as well. I said, you got tested 6 months ago and you're telling me now. And we spoke 3 months ago. He was like, yeah, well, when we spoke, you kind of annoyed me for a bit, so I didn't end up mentioning it. And then you blocked me. I said, you do realize that chlamydia can make a woman infertile if it's not treated.
Yeah.
Like, you do realize that even if that wasn't the case, it's just a basic level of human respect to tell somebody that. And, you know, I thought he was joking. This is why I have, I have too much faith in humanity. I was literally like, anyway, stop winding me up. So, and I changed topic. And he was like, I'm not winding you up. This is the real deal. Like, I'm being dead serious. And I said, do you hate me? And he said, why do you think that? I said, no, tell me, do you hate me? He said, why do you think that? I said, because I can only imagine a man that really hates me, like hates me that he wishes I was dead, would go to get a checkup, find out they have an STI and not tell me so I can get checked. I feel like you have to hate me.
But also, he would have been treated already and been clear of chlamydia by the time he was coming to tell you this. Like,
yeah, and also I had spoken already to him 3 months prior, which was like 2 months after he had found out. Do you get it? So I'm just thinking, Lee, like, this must, like, I'm gobsmacked. So I ended up wrapping the conversation because I felt like you was just trying to wind me up. Yeah, well, not you, him. And then the next day I called him back again and I said, no, all jokes aside, are you being serious? And he was like, Shan, I don't know how much more I can tell you in black and white terms. Like, I'm being dead ass. So anyway, that's just a story to let you know that if you thought cheating was the worst thing, I can tell you this is the worst thing. I mean, I got the results in the end and it was fine. But I'm just deep in now in this moment when I just saw a text that actually men are absolutely mad. Because why do you think you can violate a woman or a person in that way? Why do you think you can have sex with someone and then you get to some sort, I don't even know what his symptoms were. I'm assuming it was a tingly, tingly sensation from the little Kabudia adverts here. But why do you think you can get that and then not have the audacity to come back and tell somebody?
Yeah, but I say this all the time. Cheating is one thing because of the emotional trauma that it causes, but it's also a physical risk to your, or a risk to your physical safety, like STDs, yeast infections, bacterial vaginosis. All of those things are things that men need to be aware of. And also women, obviously, because women have a sense of autonomy over their bodies and should be careful. And to be fair, you know, I don't want to paint anyone or any group with a brush, but I also know a man who has been subject to the same thing. Like, I know a guy who had sex with a girl and then the girl did not tell him at all that she had given him, I think it was herpes. No, it was HPV. It was HPV. And you know, some men, most men don't have symptoms for most STDs. So he could have gone his entire life infected a gazillion other women and never known had he not been diligent enough to get tested on a regular basis. So I think the moral of the story is don't trust men, don't trust people, and get tested on a regular basis.
No, for real. But also, if anyone's listening, you haven't been tested in a while, get tested. Because you see me, even when I'm single, not dating, even when I was like having my stint of like being abstinent, whatever, I still got tested regularly just to make sure. But that's more just coming from a place of health anxiety. But the point is that I realized through researching whilst I was waiting for my results that for chlamydia, women are 70% asymptomatic and men are 30%. And it kind of put into perspective why we see these ads of like STIs and all these things that are on the rise, because actually a lot of people, I assume, have it and have no idea. And I say that to say that I'm not like shaming anyone that has STIs. I'm not even shaming the guy. That's the worst thing, is that if he had told me, I wouldn't have even been mad. I would have been like, okay, bro, that's fine. Like, let me go and get checked, whatever. Like, I'm not going to be angry at you. I was just more mad at the idea that you knew 6 months prior to this conversation. And had I not bumped into you on the train again, or saw you rather on the train again, and decided to ring you, I would never have known. And I just thought that was like a big violation. I couldn't believe it.
This is like a very slight segue, but you know, you mentioned like not, you know, getting tested even when you're not having sex. Did you ever take a pregnancy test even though you weren't sexually active just because you were worried about your period coming?
Listen to me. I was in the clinic getting tested on a regular when I had never had sex, yeah? I would go with my friend, sit down there, wait the 3 hours, and the lady would go, you're here again. And I'm like, yeah. And she'd be like, have you had sex yet? And I'm like, no. And she's like, so is it family planning? And I'm like, no. And she's like, so why are you here? And I'm like, just to make sure. I kissed the guy. Like, have I got something? So yeah, I've done that. And I've also, I'm not going to lie though, even at my age now, you know, during seasons of sexual activity, I always get scared that I'm pregnant. So I feel like I'm forever taking tests. Because have you heard of cryptic pregnancies?
cryptic pregnancies.
Have you heard of that?
No.
Oh, baby, let me just sprinkle some fear into your life. So cryptic pregnancies, I hope I've got the term right, yeah? It's basically when a woman is pregnant and they have no idea that they're pregnant.
Oh, okay. I've heard of that, but I didn't know that's what it was called. No.
Well, I hope I've got the right name. But like, my mom has four kids, and with all four kids, her period was there at the beginning. So it's like, okay, my genetics, my gene line, whatever you call it, shows that we'll be having periods. So even if my period is here, I still have the fear, which is why I just don't want to have sex ever again. Yeah, no sex before marriage.
Man, I used to take pregnancy tests before I was sexually active, whether or not I was using a condom. Like, I take pregnancy tests now just to be on the safe side. Like, it's, yeah, it's,
you know,
crazy.
What's actually funny is because obviously you've mentioned it before on the pod that I use your Amazon account, yeah? And I had to, I ordered a pregnancy test a few months ago. And I was like, I don't know who's going to be in my business, but it's not for me. Okay? It's
that would be me, Kemi, Jaleen.
The whole squad. I said, before I start ordering some Pampers, some nappies, like, you guys, that's how you'll know. You'll see the Amazon orders become baby socks, baby first reading books, yeah? Oh my gosh.
Hilarious. Okay, let's dig deep, Shan. Let's dig deep.
This is the Unapologetically Black Podcast.
Hey everyone, sorry to interrupt, but we just wanted to say if you're enjoying this podcast, we'd really appreciate it if you hit the subscribe button.
Unapologetically Black.
Let's dig deep. Okay, my first question to you is, what is one thing you really want me to experience?
Ooh. Well, at one point in time, it would have been an orgasm, but I think we've moved beyond that now. Because Shan has experienced orgasms in multiple instances.
Okay,
now.
We need to calm down. Okay, this is dig deep for us, but not all the listeners, okay?
But what's one thing that I want you to experience? Oh, solo travel. We've talked about this. Like, I really encourage everyone, but particularly you and another friend, Kemi, actually. I've encouraged both of you multiple times to experience a solo trip. And a solo trip that obviously you're comfortable with, but also pushes you outside of your boundaries. So whether that's distance or whether that's going to a non-English speaking country, you know, and not carrying your, like, protective armor with you and just like experiencing life. I think it's one of the best things that I do for myself, and I just want so many other women to experience it as well.
It's coming, hopefully by the end of this year. If not, it will be in the first quarter of next year. And the only reason why there's a delay is because I want to have a luxury solo travel. I want to be in business class, and I currently don't have business class money. It's because we're cool, but I'll work towards it.
And coming to Jamaica does not count as a solo trip because I'm here. So just that's for the record. Rude. Yeah. You have to go where you don't know anybody. That's the definition of a solo trip.
Real foreign.
Yes, exactly. All right. Very spicy question here. Which one of my friends don't you trust?
So I'd love to say that this is a hard question to answer, but I'd be lying. And I'm one of God's children, so I don't do that. But for the listeners, if you've listened to our episode we did with Roper, where we spoke about, I think it was forgiveness when it comes to friends, Leanne had a story where she spoke about one of her friends who slept with a previous partner of hers. And we really delved into it, guys. We really went to and fro, back and forth, sideways, left, trying to gain an understanding about why Leanne allowed this person to still be her friend. And this person is still her friend to this day. And that's fine. It's absolutely fantastic. But, you know, I just feel like with this particular friend, and it's no actual, like, I was going to say it's not personal, but I guess it is. But what I mean by it's not personal is that I've never had any interaction with this friend. So I actually don't know them as beyond that one story. Which is probably not reflective of their entire character, if I'm being honest. Do you get what I mean?
Well, I recently found out that they slept with another friend's ex as well. So,
and that is why that is the friend that I told you about 8 months ago not to trust. Like, you heard it here first, people. I told her on that episode, you can't trust your friends when they do this. And Leanne was siding, you know, and saying, oh, this was many years ago. We were young in our teens. But we're not in our teens anymore, are we?
Mm-hmm. No.
And she's still doing it again.
Yeah.
You see what my spirit just tipped me and I just know. That's why I don't know that friend. All your other friends I know, yeah, I can plan surprise dinner because I know them.
I was going to say, I don't even think that you two have met properly. Like, have you met properly?
I don't think I've even twinkled a wink or
okay,
or gave her a smud. I've never, no. We've been in the same place, but that was at your wedding. So there was too many things going on, too many people going on. I was too busy singing, being drunk, eating food, to be saying hello to more people. So yeah, but that's my answer. Probably an obvious one for you because I'm a big fan of all your friends. So my next question is, what do you think is the hardest thing for me regarding our relationship?
So good question. I think the hardest thing.
Were you going to say you think there are more than one?
Yeah, because, well, there have...
nothing, baby!
No, and this has nothing to do with our relationship per se, but I was going to say more than one in the context of things have obviously shifted. So like we're now no longer in the same country, which is obviously, it's not ideal. It's not the worst barrier ever in life, but it does make a difference in terms of the way we navigate our friendship. So that would be the first thing. I don't know if this is... I actually don't think it's a bad thing, but I think it has the potential to, if we were different people, the fact that we work together and are friends, I know so many people who it's turned out badly. So I wouldn't say that this is a problem for us, but I know many other people, many other, you know, founders of platforms and so on that struggle in maintaining a friendship and a working relationship. So I think we avoid that by being intentional about our conversations and balancing time with friendship, work time with friendship and all of that. But I know another set of co-founders of another platform and they live together and work together.
That's too much.
And they both work from home.
They might as well.
And
be.
I was like, and I was like, there's no way that Shan and I could do that. Like we're both too introverted and need our own space to recharge, mm-hmm. that we could never do that. So I think it's also just really good because we know each other really well and we know ourselves, we're both really self-aware as well.
Yeah.
So I think the distance is probably the biggest thing, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree with that. I also think with your second point, I think the only, this is not even specific to you, but like if I was to work with any friend, I think I would have a challenge if it wasn't a friend that I could be like transparent with. Do you get what I mean? Mm-hmm. So like,
yeah,
we had a conversation the other day where I spoke about like my
working style.
Yeah. And then I remember before that thinking, I actually wrote a way to say it. Yeah. On my laptop. Cause I was like, how can I say this in a way that isn't pointing blame? Cause I'm not, but is trying to gain a level of understanding, but also is trying to, and then in the end, when I spoke to you, I just said it and it was just fine. But like, I wrote it down because I'm in my head, I'm thinking of like, trying to overcompensate for like emotions and all of these things, but actually because there's a level of a very deep level of understanding between us, I didn't actually need to do that. Do you get what I mean? And I guess that was a moment that like reinforced our friendship in my head.
I was gonna say, and it's good for you to take the consideration, and I appreciate that, but also I think it speaks volumes, the fact that I already know that about you. Like what you said, I was like, I already know this, and I already consider how to maintain my own working style, but also be cognizant and considerate of the fact that you have a different working style. So, you know, that might mean like going through periods where we're both bustling and then you allowing me to take a step where it might not necessarily seem as though I'm as active as you are, mm-hmm. but maybe doing things in the background. And I think our roles have transitioned to reflect that, right? Like I do a lot of the background, slower admin, organizational stuff, and you are business hustle, da, 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 you know what I mean? Those are very reflective of our work styles as well. So I think the fact that, again, it just speaks to the fact that we know each other that well, and also the fact that we are aware of our own selves as well.
Mm-hmm.
So what makes you care so much for me? This feels very romantic.
Well, you know I do love you, and Dylan got there first. Otherwise, I would have proposed to you, Leanne. It was in the works for 2024. I was 2 years out. What makes me care for Leanne? I think in general, as a person, for people that I have close proximity to, I try to make sure that I show a level of caring or my caring side to them in whatever way that looks like to that specific person. But I think for you, I genuinely think you're someone who's deserving of that even more, I guess. Not like in a competitive way, but I feel like you're someone who, if you was to be a fly on the wall and like observe your life, you're always caring for others. Do you get what I mean? Whether it's like literally caring for others where you was looking after your mum and dad when they were ill, or it's caring for others by cooking for people when they're coming over, or it's caring for others by listening to them attentively and then responding to that and like holding space for people. Like, you're someone who, and I'm saying this from the perspective of the fact that when we first met, I was very much in observant mode because I didn't actually know you. Do you get what I mean? We was working together. And I feel like that was like a really clear trait that came across when we were first getting to know each other. Like you're a caring person. You're always showing people that you care for them in whichever way it looks like to them. And I think because of that, it's like, you deserve for that level of care to be poured back into you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And it definitely makes a difference. Like, one of the things that I think I was missing very early on in life was, this is getting deep therapy, was that sense of like love and consistency. I guess you would say that I have like avoidant attachment. Style. Mm-hmm. Where like I want affection, but I don't know how to receive it when it comes to me. And I think over the years, I've been able to really put my trust and faith in people like yourself and my other core girlfriends, more so than men for sure, to really accept and receive that kind of love and like feel like I deserve it. So thank you for that.
On that note, just to unpack, you know, we're in Rashan's therapy chair now. Because I also have an anxious, avoidant style, yeah? And actually, I was talking to someone at work about it. And the next week, you know what they gave me? 2 books. I think they actually had 4 books about anxious, avoidant attachment styles. But I took 2 to read. So when I finish reading, I'll let you know if it's worth you also reading it as well.
Yes, please do.
But like, because I've never really deeped it properly. And obviously, I need to read the book. And maybe the answer will be in the book, yeah? And then I'll come back to the pod. But like, where do you think this comes from, this need to like feel like we're deserving of love?
I want
to
say it stems from our childhood. Yes, and I don't know about your household, but, and this is, wow, revelation. But I think with both of my parents specifically, I felt like in order to receive their love, I needed to
excel.
Succeed or excel in something. Yeah. So if I didn't do well, like I remember, you know, getting the 97% and my dad being like, where's the other 3%? What happened there? I remember, you know, only being rewarded. I mean, you should really only reward your kids when they do something good because you don't want to spoil them. But I was so fearful of disappointment because of either the wrath of my mom because she had a really bad temper or the just shared disappointment from my dad if I didn't do the best, if I wasn't the best at everything that I needed to be. And I remember actually when I was 15, I was probably 16 at this point in time, I did my CXCs, I guess they're GCSEs for you guys. Mm-hmm. And I got 4 ones and 4 twos, which is the equivalent, I guess, of 4 A's and 4 B's. And I went to the car sobbing because I thought they were going to be so mad at me. I was like, I've failed. I've shamed our family because my brother and sister had done like, you know, 8 A's, 10 A's, whatever. And my dad was really chill about it. And he was like, I'm really proud of you. But that feeling of disappointing people has stuck with me throughout my entire life.
When he said that he was proud of you in that moment, did you accept it? Did you believe it?
Probably not. I probably thought that he was just saying it because he didn't want to see me cry. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's always been this like, it's not even so much disappointment of succeeding, of failure, sorry. It's more so also not succeeding in the way that they thought I should succeed.
Right.
You know what I mean? So like, for instance, I chose to do my PhD and everybody was like, why don't you just go to law school? You know what I mean? So I think not only do you need to be successful, but you need to be successful in a very particular way.
Are you the baby?
I'm the baby.
Because that's so interesting, because obviously I'm the oldest sibling, yeah? And I always try to, especially with my brother, like I took the academic route. I went to uni. I got like really good grades. My brother's smart as well. He didn't do the academic route. He's doing the creative route. So he's like on his journey of being an amazing R&B artist, which I can't wait for that, him to blow, because it's going to happen. I believe in it. But I think when he was making that decision about like going to uni or not going to uni, I remember having conversations with him in a way for me to like combat any ideas of comparison. Do you get what I mean? So I remember really reinforcing, like, you don't need to go to uni. Like, you don't need to do these things. You don't need to do that. You can create your own path, but you do need to have a job. You do need to have a plan. You do need to do that.
Yeah.
And it was because of this idea of, like, I kind of thought to myself, like, I wonder if he has a pressure. I just assumed that he would have a certain level of internalized pressure that, like, my sister's going to uni, my sister's got a scholarship, she's done these certain things. And, you know, like, the academic route, I guess, is just expected of most children. It just makes it seem like the norm, isn't it? Go to primary school, secondary school, college, university, and then after university, you might get a job. So, I think that's interesting. But then also to answer the first question for myself, so recently I've been seeing these tweets, yeah? I've been following a lot of, like, these like viral psychotherapists on Instagram. I mean, yeah, on Instagram and TikTok and Twitter. And something that keeps coming up is this, like, and it's pertaining to things that I struggle with. It will say like, do you have this, that, and that? You struggle with abandonment or rejection, yeah? And I feel like I've convinced myself that I didn't have this as an issue. But then the other day I had this thought of a memory, a very core memory. And I was like, oh my days. Poor little Shan did experience this. Yeah, let me tell you the story because it's actually so wild. So imagine my dad is obviously with my stepmom, yeah? And I've now got a sister. I've also got a stepsister, but I've got a sister who you already know. But when we was really young, and my dad like first came out of, well, the last time he came out of prison, he was back in the routine of like having us every week, yeah? And my brother would always go and stay with them at their house and I was never allowed.
Really?
And I just think, looking back, like, imagine how tapped that is. Like,
yeah.
I'm the older sibling, so if anything, you'd think I would go because I'm technically easier to look after. And I was never allowed to go to my dad and stepmom's house and stay there where my little sister was. I was always excluded. And there was never actually a reason for it. I've never been told the reason why. And the other day, I was going to ask them, but I didn't want to be bad vibes. Because how do I randomly say, oh, guys, when I was, like, 11 or 12, why did you exclude me from all the family things? But it's like that instills a sense of abandonment and rejection. So when I start therapy back again, which will be soon, I'm going to have to unpack that. Okay? Because this is why I'm going for emotionally unavailable men.
Quite possibly. I mean, yeah, that's actually a very interesting. Have you spoken to your dad about it since?
No, I haven't. I haven't. I will, though. Like, I do feel comfortable, like, I could. But I just think that's so, like, I don't know another word other than swearing, but that's just so fucked. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I was going to say it's fucked up. There's no other way to put it.
The only person I spoke to about it was my brother, because he was talking about the dynamics between, like, me and my dad now and him and my dad now. And I was saying to him that I feel like we're on this constant merry-go-round of, like, when I'm good with dad, he's not. When he's good with dad, I'm not. And I was like, I just want the day to be, like, we're both genuinely good with dad. And it's not because we're on eggshells or because we're just gritting our teeth, but because we actually are just vibing and it just works. And I was trying to say to him, like, do you know how favored you were when you were younger? And he was like, what do you mean? And I'm like, well, this is what happened. And he was like, I don't really remember it like that. And I'm like, well, you don't have to, because I'm the older sibling. So my memory wasn't like, when I was 12, you were 6. I'm remembering it accurately here. But yeah, ooh, the trauma.
I know.
We're digging deep.
Wait, is it my turn or your turn? Who just asked the last question? I don't remember what the question was. I have 2 left.
So it's me. Okay. I started. How do I inspire others?
I think as it relates to the work that we've done together, which I think is very different from what you do in your 9 to 5, is being honest. Like, when you have anxiety about something, you say you have anxiety. You don't try to like pretty it up and make it sound like, guys, it's easy. You can do this because I can do it too. It's also like, I'm struggling with this. And does anyone know how we can collectively figure this out? You know what I mean? You share your stories, I'll share mine, and maybe together we can figure it out, which I think can be so much more inspiring, because it doesn't create this like pedestal or this like mountain for people to have to climb on their own. It's like, I'm climbing this mountain. Who else is climbing this mountain? Let's climb it together. And so I think that approach of being honest about your own experiences, sharing authentically, leading by example, and like pushing through the fear to be brave about doing something, and then sharing those wins, no matter how small or how big, is incredibly inspirational. Because I don't think so many of us talk about, you know, our problems after we've already overcome them. And actually talking about them while you're in the middle of them, many of which you'll consistently have to struggle with, whether it's anxiety or whether it's mental health of some kind, whether it's, you know, consistently getting pregnancy tests to make sure you're not pregnant, even when you're sexually active. Like, we come from two different worlds, two different countries, but we both have done that time and time again. And it makes absolutely no sense, except in the minds of women who have to deal with this on a regular basis. And those are the things that unite us. You know what I mean? So I think that in and of itself makes you an inspiration.
Thanks, babes. Do you know, in the essence of oversharing, which we both do clearly on this podcast and this episode, so obviously I did a talk recently at the school, as you know, about... D&I basically. And as part of that talk, there was an exercise that I did where I asked people in the audience to talk about things that, to give an example of something that someone has told them when they were younger that stuck with them as an adult. Yeah. So whether it's positive or negative. And the guy was talking about his speech, and he was saying like he had a speech impediment, and like a stammer, and that it's got better now, but it's always hindered him. And when he has to talk up, it makes him feel very anxious and very nervous. And off the back, I was like, let me tell you a story. And I was like, do you know what? My friend's over there in the corner. Shall I tell you why? Because I'm anxious about being here. That's right. I'm anxious. I said, let me tell you something. My uncle always tells me till this day that when I talk like I've got hot water in my mouth. And so it's impacted the way I view public speaking. And that's why my best friend's there with me at this talk when I'm 27. And everyone was looking at me like... Because I was like, bitch, are you leading this talk? How do you need therapy? And it was at that moment I had the clicker, and I was like, click, click, next slide. I was like, Rashan, you've gone too deep into your oversharing mode. Come back out. Come back.
Time and place.
But I do think in hindsight, like, every time I dipped like deep into my personality, I think it actually helped
it actually
worked out, I think, better in the end. But it was just in the moment I was thinking, shit, you're doing too much. Just keep going. Just keep going.
But I think that happens with oversharers. Like, every time you, even when I was in therapy, even when I overshare with my therapist, which there's no such thing, right? Absolutely. As soon as I say something that's like deeply, deeply, deeply close to me, there's that immediate feeling of like, fuck, I've just shared too much, or I've said too much. What does this person think? And I think that happens all the time. But what could you possibly say that would bring... I think that's why we're so transparent and so honest, because there's nothing that should bring us shame, right? There's nothing that should be something that we can't talk about, because someone else has probably been through it. So
yeah,
push through that feeling.
Thank you.
Okay, question. What has my pain taught you?
So I don't know. Have you heard of this phrase yet? And let me land here, because it's going to sound a bit treacherous. But have you heard of the saying or the phrase, you should glow through what you go through?
Oh, yeah.
So I remember seeing that in the midst of COVID-19, where I was looking like what I was going through. Yeah. Looking exactly like that bitch. And yeah, using that saying as a pinpoint, I feel like your journey of your pain demonstrates that, like, you don't have to always be stuck in that. Like, at the end, you can still be glowing. Like, there's genuinely light at the end of the tunnel. And I guess with life, you're always continuously going to be on these, like, highs and lows, or maybe just for my life, but highs and lows of pain that just keeps coming and going and coming and going. But I definitely think, like, from what I know of you to be true, I feel like there's experiences that you've been through that could have really made you out to be a statistic, or could have really made you out to be someone that's really far from who you are today. So I think you kind of embody that saying, but not in that way, more just like, what's another version of it that makes sense? Okay, this would make more sense. I feel like your story of your pain demonstrates that, like, you can go through pain or trauma and it doesn't have to be the author or the determining factor of how the rest of your life comes out.
Mm.
That's what I would say. Because you've been through bear stuff, yeah? Sorry, that sounds bad. But you've been through bear stuff, but you've overcome bear stuff. Like, you've done so much amazing things. Like, you're a doctor. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, you're amazing. And it's like, so many people wouldn't be where you are now with the pain that you experience, because they would allow that to have been the hindrance to who they are and what their story was. But actually, you just kept going.
Well, I mean, therapy obviously had a fair bit to do with that, and coming in at the right time. I think one of the interesting things is, like, and this is something that therapy has taught me, is that feeling confident that you can get through whatever it is that comes in front of you. And actually, you know, even though, obviously, let me tell you, when my parents died, I did not look like I was glowing at all. But in coming out of that, I think, and I was talking to another friend of mine who's lost their parents as well, it's like, one, you have less time for absolute bullshit and people wasting you time, but also it makes you so grateful and appreciative for the things that you do have. And, like, I don't have my mom, obviously, and I will never replace her, but I have so many surrogate mothers. And for some reason, whether they know my story or not, so many of my friends' moms are just like champions or cheerleaders or surrogate moms or aunties. Like, my friend Daniela's mom is like a mom to me. V, I still call her Aunt V. Like, you know, she's always like sending messages and like just supporting us in general, which I, you know, accept as my blessing as well as yours. I have an amazing mother-in-law, which is, you know, not the case for many people. Many people don't like their mother-in-laws or their in-laws in general. Yeah. So, yeah, I constantly feel like I am, I don't want to use the cliche of blessed and highly favored, but like, my ancestors have consistently looked out for me in giving me people on, like, people who are angels on earth, like you, my girlfriend Kemi, Daniela, my girlfriend Catherine, like, all of you have been there, Christina, have been there for me in ways that people don't normally show up for other people in that way. You know what I mean? And I can only appreciate the fact that it's because, yeah, God has put you guys here for me, and for the, not just for me, but like, has put you in my life for a reason.
Well, firstly, thank you from all of us for the acknowledgement. But also, it goes back to, I think, one of my first questions that I answered about why I care for you so much. And I was saying that I observe you putting it back into other people. And I feel like sometimes, not to be wicked and bad man, yeah, but sometimes there's this weird internet culture right now about people not finding their sisterhood, not finding friends, not finding these things. And I'm not saying that what I'm going to say now is exclusive or is like the golden rule. I'm sure there's nuance. I'm sure there's like circumstances where it's different. But for people that I meet who don't have a lot of friends and want to have more friends, meaning it's beyond their control or what they want,
yeah,
they don't pour into others. Okay. When I talk to them and I hear about the man they're dating, all of their water is being poured into the man. Okay. When I talk to them about how they are their family, there's no pouring into those relationships. Yeah. So it's like, why would God, the universe, Allah, whoever. Why would you be blessed in that way to have a sisterhood or a friendship when you don't do the work to maintain them or keep them? Your energy naturally in those spaces won't even attract these people. Do you get what I mean? Like, I don't know.
It's something,
this narrative on the internet is really upsetting me, because I'm like, there's too many women that are saying they want friends for us to act like they're in a pandemic of women not having friends. There's too many.
Yeah. And let me say that it is very difficult balance. Like, now that I'm married and I have a husband and somebody else to take care of, or whether it's you're married or you have a partner, significant other, whatever it is, kids, it is incredibly difficult to find that balance, right? Because you want to make sure that your partner feels, or your kids feel, prioritized. But you also, my girlfriends were there for me before my kids came into play, before my husband came into play. And I will never do anything intentionally to jeopardize that.
Yeah.
Right? So there's two things I don't play around with. It's my work and my girlfriends. Everybody else can fuck off. Not the kids. I guess the kids shouldn't fuck off, really.
Kids, come back, come back. But yeah, what do you think is the hardest thing for me that I don't realize?
And I think this applies to me as well, so don't take this as a criticism.
Oh! Don't be feeling attacked and you haven't even started.
But I think we both struggle with a need for controlling everything and being on top of everything. Like, mm-hmm. If one thing, you know, if you can imagine people that are like spinning plates on the sticks, do you know, like that trick or whatever, or like mm-hmm. juggling something in the air. And if one thing, you feel as though if one thing falls, everything is going to go to shit. And usually it does, to be honest. But yeah, that need for control, I think, is something that it's hard. I think all women, and Black women especially, because we have so many things juggling. You have your 9-to-5, you have the platform, you have your friends, you have personal relationships, you have your romantic life, your health. I don't know. You need to go read. You need to be fit. Like, there's just so many fucking things that, now that I'm saying it out loud, I feel overwhelmed and anxious. So yeah, I think it's something that actually learning to just like let go and let things fall where they may is something that we all struggle with, and something that you struggle with.
I struggle with that a lot. Therapy taught me that, actually. My therapist said, it was something trivial to do with my ex. Like, he was planning a surprise and I was literally freaking out, and she was like, what's wrong? Why do you think anything is going to go wrong? And I'm like, I need to know when we're going to leave, how we're going to get there. I need to know that. And she was like, and then we unpacked it. You know, this is why I love therapy sessions. We unpacked it. And she was like, experiences that you've been through where you didn't feel unsafe now make you feel forced to always make sure you feel safe. And to make sure you feel safe, you always want to be in control.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, that makes so much sense.
I think sometimes we can walk into unsafe situations and make them feel safe for ourselves. Like, yeah. I have definitely walked into red flag relationships time and time again, and thinking that if I can just adjust this situation to meet my needs, it will be safe. And then I'll know it's safe because I made it safe.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, how can a situation be safe if I didn't have control in making it a safe situation? And that, yeah, that's another thing that we all have to deal with.
Mm-hmm. Okay, over to you. Final question.
The last question is, how do you care for me? Which I think we've kind of answered. I mean, we talked about an example of this already.
You can tell me if you think this to be true and be honest, okay? Because this is the Dig Deep episode. But I think I try to care for you by listening to what you say and responding, and also listening to the things that you don't say and responding. So like, sometimes when I ask you, or in the past when I've asked you, like, are you good? Are you okay? It's not because you've actually told me you're not okay or you're not good. But it's because the things that you haven't said have made me know that the likelihood is you're not good and you're not okay. Do you get what I mean?
Let me tell you something, folks. Roshan is a witch.
And I'll tell you why. She's a witch. Mom, we cast that out.
Shan will literally message me and be like, my spirit is telling me to message you. And I will be like, I just finished crying my eyes out. How did you know that something was wrong? And like, even if I tell her everything is okay, she'll be like, are you sure? Like a couple of days later, she'll be like, are you sure? Because I just feel like something's off. I just feel like I just sense it. And she's usually, I mean, I can't think of a time when you've been wrong. So, but yes, to answer your question, that is true. You're definitely very observant and you listen actively and not just responding in the moment, but like also being cognizant of the things that we've discussed in how other activities play out, right? So you know that I've been struggling with like the criticism piece. And so now you're constantly aware of how I feel or how I might feel based on how you're delivering things to me and et cetera, et cetera. Even if you don't have to, like even if it's not something that actively bothers me, you are considerate of it as a possibility, which I think is great.
Well, guys, we've now come to the end of the episode. What you need to do now is listen to another one of our episodes because we've got quite a few up. And even if you want to go back far, listen to our old podcast that we used to have, okay? Get to know us and really dig deep into who we are. So thank you guys all for listening.
Thanks, folks. See you next week.
Thank you so much for listening to the Unapologetically Black podcast brought to you by the Dope Black Women CIC.
If you like this episode, please tweet us, DM us, or even message us at Dope Black Women across all socials.
Unapologetically Black.